This is Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by Anderson, Agostino & Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Agostino & Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Welcome to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim Parisa with Pete Sampson and Tim O'Malley. We're here to preview Notre Dame-Boston College. Notre Dame leaving tonight, Thursday, to get to Boston. A 13-point favorite against a Boston College team that's 1-1 that turned the ball over four times last week. I think three of them led directly to touchdowns. So Boston College reeling a little bit. Notre Dame coming off a one-point loss. Played good football defensively, but obviously not enough offensively. It'll be interesting to see what the Irish do in terms of offensive approach against a Boston College team. Like always, is good against the run. Guys, what are your thoughts on Notre Dame bouncing back from the loss to Georgia in the game at Boston College this weekend?
I'm most interested to see how the quarterback bounces back, because I think everything else will be just as it was before Georgia showed up. I don't want this to come across as like, man, I'm really concerned about Brandon Wimbush, but I'm not going to sit there and just say, well, of course he'll be fine. Because we just haven't seen enough to know. And Boston College's defense is really good. So that is by far the most interesting thing to me about this weekend, because I think Notre Dame will win by double digits. But how Brandon Wimbush plays in response to what happened last week, I think, is critical for the rest of the season.
That's easily the number one thing for me to watch, because BC has pretty good secondary. They will have a great scheme. They have Harold Landry coming off the edge, and you can rattle a quarterback in his first road start, although in theory you shouldn't be more rattled than you were with, it seemed like, 15 athletes coming at you the entire time against Georgia. But BC will play sound defense against Notre Dame. They almost always play very sound opportunistic defense against Notre Dame, and I don't think Brandon Wimbush gets out of this game without an interception, do you?
Probably not.
Yeah. But no, that, I mean, and depending on where it is, it can matter in this game.
They have really good safety play. Will Harris, I think, is excellent. I think he's just sort of the next follow-up to some of the guys, Simmons and Johnson, over the last couple of years, who have been very good out there. So, yeah, I think it's reasonable to expect a first-year starting quarterback to throw a pick in his first road start. I mean, when you say it out loud, you're like, well, of course he's going to throw an interception.
Right, right. They've struggled quite a bit on the road. I was going to say under Brian Kelly, but that's not fair because it's been for 20 years. In the opening road game, Lou Holtz was 9-2. They are 5-15 since at Notre Dame. A lot of that is Michigan and Michigan State. You know, there's no rule that you can't beat Michigan and Michigan State, though, either at Notre Dame, so it's not really an excuse. Mm-hmm. Kelly's 2-5. Kind of some weird things in there. Like, he probably shouldn't have the crazy Virginia win, but one of his losses to open the road season was Florida State. It's not really fair.
That's the first road game of the year.
Yeah. I'm not sure you need to penalize him for that one.
What season was that?
Yeah, that's a strange thing. But yeah, they need to be better on the road. They know it. Power 5 teams, they struggle on the road, but BC's going to be one of the, aside from the rivalry, and you know how well BC's going to play against Notre Dame, Notre Dame is much better than BC.
They are. Somebody on our message board said it would be embarrassing to struggle against Boston College. I mean, good Notre Dame teams have struggled against Boston College. It would be embarrassing to lose to Boston College.
Or have to beat them.
Or to allow, more than 13 or 14 points, I think, would be a poor performance by Notre Dame. But, you know, I think, and I'm going to go back to what I've said since the Georgia game, I think Brandon Wimbush's performance goes hand-in-hand with the offensive line's performance. If Harold Landry is creating havoc all day, it will make it very difficult for Brandon Wimbush. But, you know, there's also the theory that, well, he's been in the program for 3 years, he should be better than this. It just doesn't work that way. Are there exceptions to the rule? Certainly. But in this game, the complexity of defenses, the decisions that a quarterback has to make against the complexities of a defense only come with time and experience and seeing it and feeling it. Having bad performances, bouncing back from bad performances. I'd like to think that Brandon Wimbush would do that, but I don't think that it can happen if the offensive line performs anywhere close to what it did last week.
I've said it many times, progress for a young player is not a straight line.
And right, oh, absolutely. So I think especially a quarterback.
Yes, especially a quarterback. Now, you mentioned Harold Landry. Georgia had like 7 Harold Landrys, and Boston College only has 1. So that makes like a pretty big difference. I'd like to see the offense acknowledge that, opposed to just, well, you know what, we're running our spread and the tight ends always have to go out, and you know, maybe the running back will stay in, maybe he won't. I don't know if they did a great job of that last week against Georgia. When you watch the tape, you're like, maybe you should have more than 5 guys blocking. You know, whether you have Durham Smythe where Landry is, or you know, Mack can at least chip him.
Landry will be over.
Yeah, and if you have a running back in the backfield for the sole purpose of blocking,
always be on Landry's side.
he's going to play a lot of the right side.
I hope so.
Yeah, he's going
to be. I mean, I hope that they can account for that in a way that they struggled to last week. Now that goes back to what I said initially, that Georgia had 7 Harold Landrys, so you can't account for all of them.
Yeah, you can't account for Lorenzo Carter and David Bell, and he wins the game.
You're saying Landry's going to line up on McGlinchey's side?
No.
Oh, he's going to line up. Right,
he's
going
to line up. And
yeah, that makes more sense, as much as McGlinchey struggled.
Yeah. No, he will take his shots on that side. Yeah. In obvious passing situations. Because, you know, I mean, if you're playing field boundary, he could have to line up on.
Hey, Notre Dame doesn't have 13 drops, do they?
I count 10. I mean, when I grade them, just because otherwise I don't remember it happening.
Yeah, so people know what you're talking about. There was a tweet from Pro Football Focus, who does some kind of next-level statistical stuff that O'Malley and I do quite a bit of, and they tweeted out that Notre Dame had 13 drops through 2 games and had 24 all last year. I don't believe agree with the 24. The 13 is overstated, because that includes, I think, 3 from Alize Mack.
Yeah. 2 from St. Brown.
Yeah, and
2 from Claypool.
The Smythe drop, that's a tough one.
Considered a drop?
That's what they're considering.
Are you going to ding Fink for a drop?
I am, because you got to make the play.
Yeah, it was a tough play. Because, I mean, even the first one to St. Brown, I thought it was a drop when I watched it. And then when I just was like, frame by frame, he gets raked before the ball shows up.
Yeah, it was a combination underthrown pass and not everything done right.
Yeah, really. I mean, he was getting interfered with before the ball shows up.
Maybe we should just say it should have been a touchdown and he didn't catch it.
I'm fine being a tough grader on that, but overall, I think that Notre Dame's receivers have been underwhelming, but not in terms of drops.
They don't have a drops issue. Mack has a drops issue through 2 games, because you shouldn't have more than 1.
Right.
And he has at least 3. Some of the grades were really tough. I mean, Cam Smith has 1, but it was, I don't know, you're dropping a screen that's going to be a 2-yard catch against Temple. It's really not the end of the world drop either. Like, that's where the stat is getting skewed. Oh, they're dropping the ball so much. It wasn't all against Georgia when they needed it. I mean, Cam Smith bobbled the ball. It's just not.
On that subject, I wrote about this yesterday. I think Notre Dame has a receiver problem, and it's going to hurt Equanimee St. Brown this year, because it's not the same thing as, well, we had Michael Floyd and we got creative with him. We had Tyler Eifert and we got creative with him. We had Will Fuller and we got creative with him. Because then you had TJ Jones, DeVaris Daniels. Tyler Eifert was sort of a compliment to Floyd back then.
And really good one.
Even Fuller was senior Chris Brown, senior Amir Carlisle.
Oh, absolutely.
And up-and-coming Torrey Hunter Jr.
And his junior year, or his sophomore year, he had a good Corey Robinson.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, like, what St. Brown has right now is unproven Cam Smith, injured Freddie Canteen, Chris Fink, who I think could be good, Claypool, who's inconsistent with his hands. Like, there's just not...
Guy on the bench.
They just don't have guys to sort of rotate through and take the pressure off St. Brown, at least until Stefferson returns at some point.
Well, and Fink's in the starting lineup this week because of Freddie Canteen's injury. I think most people are probably excited about that, because Freddie Canteen has been underwhelming. And Chris Fink was good last November, or started to emerge last November. Talking to him yesterday, I mean, he considers that last play a drop.
It was catchable, for sure.
Yeah, where he thinks, you know, that's kind of hard when you're, like, sliding to make a catch. Your pad level's all over the place.
Sometimes the point of the game is when you're just like, it's going
to
be a catch.
But his point was, and talking to him about, you know, you had to prove yourself to Denbrock, then you had to prove yourself all over again to Alexander, and he's like, I basically feel like I got to prove myself every time I go out there, which is he says, I feel like, you know, like I have to think like a walk-on, meaning I'm a walk-on, I have to overachieve. Not play like a walk-on, but, you know, overachieve. And I think that's the right frame of mind, and I think he can help. You know, he's not going to be a huge difference maker in the passing game, but he can help.
Be better than him.
Agreed. Maybe Cam Smith is that guy. I think if you put him in Mike more Mack playmaking yeah. situations. Right. And obviously, yes, Alize Mack is. I know a lot of people want to give up on Alize Mack. Sure. There's no waiver wire, man. You've got to keep coaching him up and keep sending that stud out there and hope to get his head right, because his head's not right when he's making drops.
We talked about Fink in November last year, and in August, I think, we said Fink should definitely be involved in the passing game more so than some of these guys, but you don't want him to be your second best receiver. Yeah. You need him to be your third or fourth. Yeah, maybe and then he can be really now. Effective, though, if he's your third or fourth.
Yeah.
He'd be really effective.
Yeah, Mack and, I mean, even Cam Smith have to be better than Chris Fink, I guess. But I think they need Fink in the rotation, because the last six or so games, he's going back to last year, he's been pretty good.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to look at Michael Young and acknowledge that a month from now, he'll be a lot better than he is right now, because he's just starting
the same
his
reason. The same reason you needed Michael Young on the field last week was the same reason you needed Dexter Williams to get a couple touches, too. You need a home run. You need somebody to, you can't get anything with any consistency. You need a home run. Who can give us that home run? Those are a couple guys.
I mean, Georgia found it with Swift on the 40-yard gain. That's why they scored one more point than Notre Dame. They had a big play like that. Yeah. That was, if Notre Dame had another, throw a 40-yard play in there. Things are okay right now. They really desperately needed something like that, because you could just tell it was not going to get strung together.
Yeah. I mean, look at Swift. He had three touches. One was a 40-yard run. The other one was a 2-yard run. The other one was a minus 4-yard catch.
I believe
all we remember is he had helped win the game, right?
Yeah.
He had a 15-yarder that was negated by a penalty, too.
They had a lot of those.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's...
Maybe that was Hardman. One of those two.
I feel like the running back rotation is more just a curiosity this weekend, because I don't... Like, they could not play Dexter Williams at all, and it won't make a difference this weekend, at least in the box score and the result of the game. It will make a difference in the post-game press conference and on message boards. But, look, there's... Somebody brought this up to me, and their interest in Dexter Williams was less about Dexter Williams and more about, like, how about not running Josh Adams into the ground? And Josh Adams has had some limps and pains the last couple weeks in game. It's been noticeable. You know, he's played through them. He's a tough dude. But I went over the last two games, and I've got Josh Adams at 128 snaps and Dexter Williams at 7. That doesn't make much sense to me. So they got to work him into the rotation when the game's on the line at some point. This weekend would be a good time for that.
Let's talk about Boston College a little bit. They lost, or they had a really nice victory over Northern Illinois. They showed great resiliency there after losing a 10-point lead. And then Wake Forest, it all fell apart. Anthony Brown, 3 interceptions, pick 6, another one that was returned inside the 5. Most of what Wake Forest accomplished offensively with scoring 34 points was a result of the miscues on offense for Boston College. The biggest difference I see in Boston College from, especially when Steve Adazios is now his fifth year, in their first 2 years they really ran the ball well, including their quarterback Tyler Murphy. They're not running the football well now either, and that's real disaster for Boston College, because their passing game, although Anthony Brown gives them more athleticism and is a dual threat, if they can't run the ball consistently against Notre Dame, they have no chance of scoring points unless Notre Dame turnovers that lead to short scores.
They lost their starting center, so it's not going
to get that is really huge. And
I think Pete did a good interview with their O-line U. It's true. They churn them out, and when they're not going pro, they're really good college lines. And that hurts a lot. He's the anchor. I'm not comparing the ability to play, but it's, you know, if Notre Dame was out there and they lost their best lineman, Quentin Nelson, it would be a major problem for your team.
Certainly.
It might even be a bigger one for them, because they don't have the other guys to bat yet.
They just don't have a bunch of playmakers. Their receiving core, I think, is a little bit improved and has a little bit of size in some spots. Jeff Smith, a former quarterback, is playing wide receiver for them. But they're not running the football. Hillman's, who was a 900-yard rusher a couple years ago, is not accomplishing a whole lot on the ground.
Prediction: Jeff Smith, the former quarterback, will not score touchdowns like every former quarterback that played wide receiver against Notre Dame last year. Left and right, everywhere you looked. Duke, Virginia Tech, everywhere you looked, there was a former quarterback scoring touchdowns at wide receiver. Not happening this time.
Yeah, a true freshman at center, I think, with what we've seen from Notre Dame on defense, if you combine a true freshman center with a redshirt freshman quarterback, 10 points would be a lot.
This, yes, Jerry Tillery and Jonathan Bonner should have a field that is playing as well as they are or as improved as they've played. This is a huge opportunity for them this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, the last time a Mike Elko defense faced Boston College last year and allowed 2.7 yards per play, 167 total yards, and forced 8 three and outs. The time before that, it just shut them out completely. So I don't see how Boston College has any success. I am to the point where I'm confident that Notre Dame's defense will make a bad quarterback look bad now, yeah. Which I haven't been for a while. This is a bad quarterback. So I think that they will make Boston College's offense look bad.
And that's why, and it's too early to tell, it's too early to say that Mike Elko has completely changed this defense because they've got three road games in the next four.
This shouldn't be the first but one that looks different, though.
No, this game should not be that way. And that's one of the reasons why I'm encouraged about Notre Dame going on the road, despite the recent statistics, is that I think Notre Dame's going to pack their defense when they go on the road through the next 4 weeks. I think North Carolina, despite losing a lot of playmakers, have some athletes there that'll give you problems. But isn't it interesting that not only is Elko developing a better defense, better individually and better collectively, and at the same time, developing depth? Which is a completely foreign idea at Notre Dame.
And I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but Jay Hayes yesterday, I asked him about creating a new line of scrimmage and how they're better at that. He said it's all about the freedom to play and discipline, and those seem different. But he said we are disciplined in what we do, and thus we have the freedom to play.
That's a really interesting comment.
He used those together, and those aren't what defensive linemen usually use together: discipline and freedom.
Yeah, that's true. I think Notre Dame's defense will play great this weekend.
I do too.
You know, maybe there will be a big play or a bust here or there, but I'd be surprised if it was more than one because that you watch the structure of the defense over the last couple of weeks, they're not turning guys loose. When Georgia hit big plays in the passing game, it was because they made big plays in the passing game. Like, that happens in football.
They have scholarships.
Yeah, they're pretty good guys. That's so why it's
really,
okay.
It's really critical to protect football in this game because that's the only way Boston College can score, if you give them a short field or a pick six or something like that. Boston College going 7 plays, 80 yards, you know, 9 plays, 75 yards, that just should not happen this weekend.
And it won't.
No, so, I don't think so.
O'Malley, your prediction?
Well, you know the bad stats about Notre Dame on the road. I have one for you for BC. This is the last time they beat a Power 5 team at home, Boston College.
You tell us.
2014. Two full seasons they played without beating a Power 5 team in their home stadium. It's not going to be this week. I think Boston College will play their best game of the year because they're up for it more than anything else. But their offense couldn't score to keg party. It's 30-10 Notre Dame. Handle them easily. If this game is close with 5 minutes to play in the third quarter, I think there's a major
problem. Notre Dame.
And I think it would be a problem going forward, almost. Unless it's just the craziest confluence of events like 2015, where Notre Dame kept turning it over in the red zone and weird things happened. But I'm in the 30-10, 30-13 range.
I'm just going to copy the score from 2012, 21-6. Last time they played at Boston College.
You like the D a lot more for BC this week then?
I do. I do not see Boston College getting to double figures.
No, I mean, you like Boston College really holding them down, though.
Yeah, I don't think Notre Dame's going to come in and just whoop them on offense. I'd say that if Anthony Brown throws a pick six, then I'm going to go up.
In normal circumstances,
Notre Dame will score 3 offensive touchdowns on long drives. They won't look great offensively, but they'll look good enough, and Boston College will have no shot at offense.
Think about how bad Boston College has to be for Notre Dame to be a 13-point favorite on the road. You know, I mean...
well, they haven't beat a Power 5 team in 2 years.
And yet, I've been writing about all week and tweeting about all week. This series is a low-scoring series. The last 12 games that have been played, the average combined score of the two teams is 36 points.
That's ridiculous. You know, we were on the 2015 game.
So it could be 36, be
27-9. For all the times we're wrong, I'll just say that on the podcast. We were all over the game in 2015. It was the preseason. This is a trap. This is going to go terribly. Not as bad as it did, but I think we had BC Notre Dame winning by like 7 in the craziest, awful game, and it was even worse than we thought it was going to be. But I don't see it again. I don't think.
I agree with Notre Dame covering, even though everything says
Pete's score would concern me for the rest of the year.
21-6?
Yeah. Got to be able to. 21. You can't create something defensively with a short field against BC, and you know. I guess I'm not that much higher, 30. It's not crazy. It's a couple of field goal drives, but...
Yeah.
I put Boston College's maximum points of 13.
Yeah. The minimum at zero.
The spread... And you know what? I would have said... It looks like they found a kicker. He's 4 for 4. He actually has kicked pretty well, so...
2 field goals.
Yeah, six. There you go. There you go.
we don't need to play.
I think I'm inclined to agree in Notre Dame covering, but I'm hesitant to go up into the 30s because the trend in this series is so... And Boston College's defense is still Boston College's defense. So I'm in the line's 13. I'm in the 27-13 score range.
You gave your prediction early.
I have that last couple of weeks, and I've actually stuck with it, and I'm 2-0 against the spread, so maybe I should go ahead and do that.
All right, well, that's it for segment one, Irish Illustrated Insider. We got questions from our readers. We'll tackle all that next.
Irish Illustrated Insider is brought to you by Anderson, Augustino, and Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Augustino, and Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider Segment 2. We got a bunch of questions from Twitter, but they're all about the wide receivers, basically, and we had a question from our reader about that. So don't feel neglected if we're not answering your wide receiver question. But we did have one Twitter question that I thought was interesting that I'm going to spring on O'Malley and Priest here, and it's from Fritz. And he wants to know, what would have to happen on Saturday to silence all the Kelly detractors?
Nothing this Saturday.
Oh, that's not...
It's humanly possible.
It's impossible.
No way?
Nothing.
50 to nothing?
Nothing. Nobody would care. Half the fan base won't... No way.
No way?
I know... All right. I have friends that have been traveling to road games for 25 years. They're not going to a game this year. And I guarantee you half of them don't watch this game. Because of the Georgia game. Now, you could call that out as a bad fan or whatever, but it means they want something to change. And I am telling you, no, I know.
Not even watch is that's a bad fan.
I'm just saying. I'm just telling you, I know plenty of people that don't care about this game, and they will look and see that Notre Dame won. And if they don't win, then they'll say, okay, well, now our what we want to happen at the end of the year will happen. There's nothing that could happen this week.
Okay.
There is something that can happen in the next 4 weeks. Win, 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 and win with 3 road wins and look decent.
Brian Kelly can get the fans back when they're 6-1.
In beating US. USC.
Right.
Totally
right.
Agree. So nothing this week, right?
Nor next week, even though Michigan State is playing good football.
I will be super impressed if they win all 3 road games. I'm on record as saying they won't.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's funny because it's really 2 road games now because I can't imagine them losing this one. But there's a cumulative effect for me. So I would be very impressed with all 3 road games. And I would think, man, he really has a quality team here. And then you can't judge him too harshly against USC. It's just you can't keep losing to all the good teams. But
right. Do you, Pete, think there's anything that
50 to nothing
can be
would
done?
Matter?
I think 50 to nothing would, like, some people be like, oh, hey, I'm excited for the, I'm re-engaged for the season. Maybe not... I'm back in love with the head coach, I want to keep... It's like, ooh, Wimbush threw for 6 touchdowns.
I got one for you.
It's exciting.
50 to nothing, 3 Dexter Williams touchdowns, 2 Chase Claypool touchdowns, and a tight end scores on a touchdown with a blocking tight end in front of him. That would make
people
happy.
That would be exciting.
That would. I'm telling you, I don't think people... This game is just go out and win and move on.
So you're...
Nothing.
This game is viewed at like the level of Temple or Rice.
Yeah, but that shouldn't be, but it is viewed that way.
The alarming thing is if your defense gives up a bunch of points. That's alarming. I mean, I don't know why anyone would expect the offense to score
50.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean,
or even 40.
Or even 40. Right,
yeah.
Right. I felt high end when I was saying 30.
Last time they went over 31 points on Boston College was 1997.
Right.
Been a while.
They had 31 with Kelly, right? His first year?
Yep.
And that was just as bad of a team for BC, only they had Chase Reddick. He's much better than this quarterback, though. That was his first start.
Was he?
Right?
I don't know
Not
if he
that.
Was.
Not that.
Yeah. All right. Next question. Dashing Domer. When writing, do you feel pressure to satisfy the general mood of your customer base, or do you feel more compelled to respond objectively to what you have witnessed on the field and all the factors affecting the program at any given point in time. Is that an either or proposition?
It's not an either or proposition, because I think in my column, I feel compelled to respond objectively to what I witness on the field with all the factors affecting the program. And sometimes that gets taken poorly. For instance, when they beat Miami last year, I basically wrote, it's the same as all the other games. There's nothing better about this. They happen to recover a fumble. I try to write the column of, with the mood of the customer base in mind, because that's relevant, right? I mean, taking the Temple game alone and writing a column about it isn't that interesting. And taking, it's not fair to take the Georgia game alone.
Right.
You have to take the big picture into it. It's, you're going to take the BC game alone and talk about what a moment it was for Notre Dame and the fans to beat BC, who hasn't beaten anyone in 3 years. You kind of got to take the mood of the fan base in it, right?
Yeah, I think you have to.
We do analysis of a game. Where right, we're but totally then, in the but, game, but not the column.
But because it's a, because that column is written once a week, I think you have to, or at least I try to, this is what happened. This is big picture at this point.
Right.
The overriding factor for me in writing a column is the truth.
Yes.
Now, sometimes the truth is harsh. Sometimes readers think it's too harsh.
Well, it's been harsh for a while, and I think, I'm sure people are getting sick of us being harsh for, Miami game. It didn't matter. I was celebrating, they beat Miami last year.
How would it be anything?
The ground, they got it. I mean,
how would it be anything but harsh when you've lost 10 out of 15 games?
That's what I mean.
To me, that's the truth. That's the reality of where you are. As difficult as a ninth close loss win or a close loss game out of 10 was, I still felt after the game that this is a better team and that they are going to be a 5-1 when USC comes around. That's an effort to balance how I'm feeling and how I'm thinking about the game. But the overriding fact, the overriding determination in writing a column, I think, is to write the truth. And I don't think that we've done anything but write the truth the last 15 games.
I agree with that. I guess from the other point of view, a fan could be sick of hearing about the overriding truth and might just want to hear Georgia's really good. Notre Dame was right there. They would have gotten, and that's still the past, they would have gotten killed last year by Georgia.
Yes.
They would have gotten destroyed. But I don't know if that's that great of a compliment either. It's hard not to write about the overriding truth of a team that's 17-17 since the Florida State game.
Yeah. Pete?
I look at it from the perspective of, I know a fan is reading this, opposed to just some random person who clicked on IrishIllustrated.com.
After the Temple game.
Yeah, after the Temple. That wasn't what I was Googling. So I definitely come into it from the perspective of that, as a fan, you probably have a really good understanding of like what's happening around here. Some good knowledge of 17-17 or 1-9 in one score games, or the fact that Brandon Wimbush is starting his second game, or the fact that you watch the game and Brandon actually played pretty well, especially on defense. But I sort of look at it as, I want to approach it from a fresh angle that is not so obvious.
It's good because you do it the next day, late in the day.
Yeah, so that's what I'm, there's where I'm trying to go with it.
You generally can include some Brian Kelly too, because that is part of the story.
I at least get the context of what he said on Sunday.
Big games is part of it.
Yeah, so that's, I do feel like sometimes the big picture just blots out everything else, and I struggle with that, because it's like, if you're just writing the big picture, then I think the games sort of become in some ways lost, because the big picture has been painted before the kickoff. So I think one of the hard things to do with editorials that, you know, we're putting out on Saturday and Sunday is just to be able to spot when the narrative changed and when this was the first stroke of a new big picture. And that's what I think you could come away, if you were an optimist after Georgia, you could look at that and say, like, I think this might be the start of a new big picture, even though it feels like the tail end of an old one.
I mean, I think I wrote about three themes last week. You can't keep losing close games. The defense is much better, and because of that, they can go on the road and have success. But I think the overriding message that stuck with, was that, and it was presented harshly, because that's, I mean, we're columnists. That's part of what you do. And losing 9 out of 10 close games is on the coach. I think if I lost 9 one-run games out of 10 games,
it actually goes back before last year. It goes through Stanford.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where the beginning of it is.
Right.
They won some close games with BC and Temple and Virginia, obviously.
I think somebody made a fair point on our board where they said, well, like, the players have changed. And my response was like, well, the head coach hasn't. Like, he's flipping the coin and it keeps coming up tails. Something is weird there.
You still didn't make a decision, call a play, insert a player that
made it
made the difference between a win and a loss.
I don't know why I did this. It was for a different exercise, but this really is related to this. So those losses, there were seven. It was because they were 17. It's weird to me that he was so good, 43-15 or whatever, and then 17-17 from FSU. So the losses are had a chance to. That's dating back to Georgia, starting with Georgia, had a chance to win at the end with a field goal fumbled. USC handled them. Had a chance to win or tie against Virginia Tech on the last drive. Downs. 7 minutes to stop Navy, get the ball back. Couldn't do it. Had a chance to beat Stanford. Turnover on downs in the red zone. NC State was the fumble. It's kind of a weird one, of course. With the ball against Duke to win, to turn it over on downs is unconscionable. That's ridiculous. Michigan State, chance to tie. They punted and turned it over on downs. Mm. Overtime against Texas, they got the field goal. Texas got the touchdown. And then Stanford, they had 23 seconds to stop Stanford from going to field goal range. They didn't do it. Those are all really bad. They're not all really on the coach, but they're all on something.
You had an inadvertent face mask penalty, but...
Yep. But it's there by a good player. You know, and before that, so they hung on to beat BC. They actually, you know what? Let's be fair, though. That was a terrible game, but they Matthias Farley recovered an onside kick. If he doesn't, we're talking about a 10th in the biggest upset. Yeah. Great play by Will Fuller to beat Temple. Great play by Will Fuller to beat Virginia. Clemson had a chance to win or tie, and they didn't. Like, that's a lot recently.
It's an overwhelming amount.
So basically
amount.
You'd had 3 close wins, especially Temple and Virginia were really good wins to pull out, and you'd had another loss with Clemson, so you're 3-11.
Not very good.
Yeah.
Statman 72, will Notre Dame emphasize the running game against BC to rebuild the confidence of the O-line, or emphasize the passing game to further Wimbush's development?
I think they'll emphasize the running game to win the game. I don't think that the offensive line needs its confidence rebuilt at all. Nor do I think the Boston College game would rebuild it if it needed to be rebuilt. I think the offensive line is fine. They'll emphasize the running game to rebuild Brandon Wimbush, the passer. That's how I think they'll do it.
Yeah, I would agree.
By turning into a play-action quarterback.
I know it's not an either-or. There's not an either-or answer here. It's difficult running against Boston College, but Chip Long will try. I think we know... You know, Notre Dame struggled running the football, but we know he will try to establish a running game. But if that's not going anywhere, well, then you have to throw it a little bit more, like they did last week.
I want Brandon Wimbush to be less involved to make him better. He's too involved.
Single
he can't handle
it. Hits, please.
He can't handle the amount. I don't mean the amount of hits. He it's all on him.
Yeah,
it shouldn't all be on him.
And that was one of the things I wrote over the weekend. Because I thought that they maybe had evolved out of this after the Temple game, and maybe they haven't. Just like, I realize you can't ask the quarterback to have the same responsibilities as the left guard, but they put a lot on the quarterback here, and I kind of felt like at Temple, maybe they're starting to move away from that. Maybe they're spreading the wealth around in terms of the responsibilities of making plays, and then the Georgia game happened, and it's like, this kind of feels like it's back to the way it was before.
I think it's difficult to judge that when the offensive line gets its ass kicked. I mean, so the alternative is Brandon Wimbush handing it off to somebody else.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
they didn't have a lot
as
of
opposed
options.
To read option. Yeah, they didn't have a lot of, they didn't have a lot of chances against Georgia. It's not an excuse, it's true. They probably had to have Brandon Wimbush gain some yards on keepers he didn't gain, right? They just weren't getting there.
You're not going to beat a great defense with a game manager quarterback.
You know, and if, I mean, really, if one play would have been different, Notre Dame would have won, but the Okwara penalty in the 3rd-and-2 decision by Wimbush when Notre Dame was winning by 2 midway through the fourth quarter. They were winning in both instances. Those were such critical plays because...
Daylon Hayes missed tackle on 3rd down.
Yeah.
That was a
big one. And gained a lot of... Yeah, it was about a 15, 20-yard swing, 18-yard swing.
So, yeah.
There's plenty, though. I mean, Georgia drops a touchdown.
Right, and that... that has to be. It was pointed out in, by us several times.
Notre Dame could have started the game with a touchdown. They got a field goal out of it. That would have been a nice way to start the game and loosen up Georgia, though, the flea flicker touchdown. Because it was there for a touchdown, yeah, for sure.
Georgia was probably like, yeah, it would have been nice to start with a kickoff return touchdown. Yes. It's just like, you know, it cuts both ways, and it did. It did on Saturday. All right, Dip 98, channeling everyone's non-Dexter Williams questions into one. Through two games, we are getting zero or near zero production from Alize Mack, Tony Jones Jr., Chase Claypool, Miles Boykin, and Kevin Stefferson. Who's the most important guy to get involved and why?
Mack, because he's the missing weapon that is reasonable. I would say Jones Jr. is 2A because he's going to be playing, so you want more out of him because I think he's a playmaker. Claypool is theoretical, but boy, they need confident Chase Claypool to get two shots down the seam and one jet sweep every game. You know, that's just something they need in this offense. Stefferson, I don't know how far he is from playing. He goes to number two if he's a real contributor in October. I just don't know if he can be a real contributor at this point. And Boykin is not involved in my list of what you absolutely need.
I don't know that I can disagree with anything that you said there. I think Alize Mack is number one. If Stefferson's going to play, he's right there with him. Jones Jr. is part of their game plan in a couple different ways, in the passing game, in the split back. And Claypool is a talent that they need to, I don't know if you need to improve his confidence catching the football, but he needs to be a better player and they need to find a way to get him involved. Miles Boykin is third on the depth chart. That's on Miles Boykin, not Notre Dame.
Alize Mack has played 78 snaps so far this season. The rest of the guys on the list have played 60. So
he's overriding.
He's already involved. He just needs to figure out a way to be more productive as he is. I don't think they're really playing the wrong guys as much as somebody asked me, do you think they should be playing Ian Book? I'm like, no. Like,
oh,
these are the guys that they have. Roll with them. But you need to get more out of Mack, more out of Claypool. I mean, Claypool has only had 19 snaps. Could he have been more productive than those 19? Yeah, absolutely.
He had a drop last week.
When you have your opportunity, you got to seize it. And then who knows what happens with Stefferson. But I think Alize Mack on offense, for all the talk about the receiver position, I feel like he's sort of the missing link that's still a little bit missing. They need to figure out a way for him to be a threat.
Yeah, he's caught four passes. He had a big 32-yarder last week. He's been inconsistent. And as you say, Pete, he's getting tons of snaps.
They keep working him, for sure.
He needs to be more than catching four passes, dropping three passes, and not being thrown to enough.
There's no doubt about that.
He looks nothing like, this is horrible, I'm using the blue goal game. He looks nothing like the guy that's running down the seam and doing deep crossing routes the entire time.
The question said zero production, and he has produced. He's been inconsistent and should have produced more. I think Dexter Williams should be on this list.
Would he be sure ahead of Mack?
No.
No, he'd be two.
No.
Because you have
your lead back. Although you have your lead receiver in St. Brown, but you need compliments to your lead receiver.
They'd both be great to be on this list.
You know, Mack, whatever. It doesn't matter what the ranking is. Dexter Williams needs to be more involved. Alize Mack needs to be better. Claypool needs to be more involved, and he will be if he's more consistent. Jones Jr. will get his opportunities, I think, because he's in the mix and has been.
Nurbach, what do you want/need to see out of Notre Dame against Boston College that would give you confidence in the team going forward this season?
Good game by Brandon Wimbush. A very good game by Brandon Wimbush would give me total confidence in the offense. Put all the confidence I had in them going into the season back. Probably related to that is Mack playing a role, a major 6 catches, 85 yards. He's emerging as a football player. The defense is going to play fine.
Well, I would put defense first because I agree. I think they're going to play fine. But if they give up 400 yards,
then you'll be worried.
Then you'll be worried. I think this should be a less than 300 yard game for Boston College.
It's also going to be weird to think of 400 yards because no one's ever voluntarily played 8 defenders in a whole game before. Because that's the only way they're going to 400 yards to this team offense.
Right.
I'm definitely on Wimbush here. That's I think the biggest variable this weekend that would shape my opinion of the rest of the season.
You're assuming the offensive line has a good game?
Yes.
Okay.
They'll be fine. Offensive line will be fine. I think Dexter Williams will play. I think the defense will be good to very good, maybe great. But Wimbush, I just don't know. And I wanted to work this into my extra points. I just didn't really figure out. It wasn't coming together for me. What if Brandon Wimbush is just not that accurate?
I had that question multiple times on Twitter.
I just can't go there yet.
I can't either.
I just can't go there yet.
I think it was the game situation with his happy feet. And he couldn't set his feet, first of all, because when he did, he got hit in the face.
Right.
I mean, he got hit in the chest when he set his feet. I think he got happy feet in that pocket, and I don't blame him, really. I mean,
if you
what was his internal clock thinking by the middle of that game? Just like, what?
I mean, right. I didn't have any time. And here. He didn't that decision not to turn it up on third and two was because of the punishment that he had taken prior to that. Now that's weakness on his part.
Yeah, there was that. Remember when he went out of bounds on third down? Like he wasn't.
I don't know what that.
He wasn't going to get the first. And
but
I thought. Told
but he reacted like it. Yeah, like I didn't know where. Was the, and he did make a comment after the game about down and distance. Although maybe that was a third and two.
Yeah, I asked him after the game, is there a play that you would want to have back? And he said the third and two.
Okay.
Rush
okay. Right. Outside. Okay.
But the other one, I think the other scramble on third down doesn't speak to toughness or anything. It speaks to just like his head was spinning. I don't think he really knew what was happening.
To credit him, he had that great spin move on third down.
That was really
nice. Okay, well, my question, if you include Fink as a drop pass, which I don't think I did, then it was five drop passes. So, and I know in a game, you're not going to go without a drop. But if they catch those passes, he's 25 for 40. What more... what more would you have expected against a Georgia defense that's collapsing your offensive line?
I think 25 out of 40 would have been a really good game.
Well, then he had five drops.
Yeah. One for a 75-yard touchdown. That's true. Although he underthrew him. He had to hit that. That was him, though. But that was more him than
he did. We've overanalyzed. They need to play another game to see Brandon Wimbush play. You know? But
to get back to like the other side, there's another side of this argument, is Georgia also had some drop passes of Brandon Wimbush. I mean, how differently would we be doing that?
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just, we were talking about the same thing Monday.
Yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I just...
There's not enough on Brandon Wimbush.
To say
right
that
now.
Brandon Wimbush is not going to be accurate based upon the Georgia game because of the way the offensive line got manhandled, I just can't go there yet. We've seen Brandon Wimbush be accurate practice after practice after practice.
And I'm not going there yet. I'm just saying, what if? Like... What if we missed the boat on this one based on what we've seen in practice? I just looked over the two-game stats for Wimbush and Kizer. Now, yes, Texas and Nevada is not Georgia and Temple. Not even close. But on passes of 5 yards and less, Wimbush is 18 of 26. Kizer was 16 of 18 with 3 touchdowns. Wimbush, 0 touchdowns. Passes from 5 to 20. Kizer through 2 games last year was 12 of 14 for a buck 81 and 3 scores. Wimbush is 15 of 31 for a buck 88 and 2 scores.
I want to say
50%. Kizer's 12th and 13th start though.
Yeah,
I mean that makes it tough.
What role is
there's just a huge gulf between those?
But what and
numbers.
Then what you have to factor in the wide receiver core and where are they now as a group? I meant to ask Brian Kelly that Tuesday. I'm asking it tonight. Where's your wide receiver core at this point? Because that's a factor, too. So you have drops. You have inexperience. Mm-hmm. You have an offensive line getting caved in. I
don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I can't come to the conclusion or even wonder yet, is Brandon Wimbush ever going to be accurate? I think that's...
You know what?
I think that's too far.
We actually have a 2-game set to find out, because this is not easy quarterbacking it. On the road for BC and Michigan State. He has the hardest job because the offensive line should do fine.
The strength of, BC's secondary is good. Notable.
The defense should do fine in these 2 games.
Michigan State's defensive numbers so far against...
Have they given up?
They haven't given up a touchdown yet.
They're off the chart numbers right now.
So, I think it all goes back to what we said at the very top of this podcast. What are you most interested to see on Saturday? Brandon Wimbush. Right. It'll be the same answer for Michigan State.
I don't disagree. I just, for me, first and foremost, the defense. If the defense is as good as we think they're going to be this weekend, they'll score enough points to win.
So getting away from the big picture, because I answered too big picture, what does Notre Dame need to do to bring back the fans for this game? They can't do anything in the big picture, but if Brandon Wimbush is pretty good and good in these next two games, it would bring back the diehard fan that wants to know what's going on with Notre Dame football, because that is a great sign if he does well in these two games.
So you agree with my 50-0 win with six touchdowns from Brandon Wimbush. Coming around to my point of view,
O'Malley. We're going to have to call a lot of people. I don't know what happened, but there's...
All right, another offensive question in the passing game. Go Irish, go five. Should we be concerned with the lack of vertical passing attack through two games? How important is it that this particular team be able to connect on long shots down the field moving forward?
Concerned.
Yeah.
I think very concerned. Because this was part of the reason we were told they brought Cam Smith and Freddie Canteen in to begin with. Because they didn't have enough speed at the wide receiver position. But now that we've seen Smith and Canteen, they don't have enough speed at the wide receiver position.
Well, they're certainly not. Cam Smith isn't running many routes downfield.
Yeah, the whole take the top off the defense thing is not happening. So
they misevaluated
an inexperienced player
and brought him in as a fifth year.
He's doing fine for them, though.
Yeah, no, I agree.
He just shouldn't be their second receiver. But we shouldn't. I got to stop penalizing Cam Smith for being their second receiver. It's not his fault.
Right.
He did everything he could do, and he worked himself into the second receiver role. It's like when people were mad at Tommy Rees for starting 31 games. Not his fault.
Yeah, for John Ryan.
Yeah, we're all over. But I'm not saying another bad word about Cam Smith. He's worked his way to the role that no one else can get. It's just he's not great at it yet.
Yeah. Good. And this was not something that they were, like, one, their best deep threat wide receiver is not in uniform or on the bench.
I don't think he was in uniform.
It's Kevin Stefferson.
On Saturday. I think he was in uniform at home.
By far. And to go back to the two-game split numbers with Kaiser and Wimbush, Wimbush is 4-12 on throws over 20 yards for a .121, which is actually not bad, because through two games last year, Kaiser was 1 of 9 for 30 yards and a score. It wasn't like he was lighting it up with the deep ball. So unlike 2015 when he was, that had everything to do with the guy catching it and not the guy throwing it. Wimbush doesn't have a guy to really catch him right now because that guy's not playing.
You're saying Will Fuller was better than having a bunch of receivers running around?
Good Lord.
Yeah, I like the first-round pick registered wide receiver versus a bunch of guys. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, well, we don't know enough.
I'm sticking to it. Tim, do you have any comments on Brandon Wimbush?
We need a football game, man. We need to see a football game badly because we've dissected the heck out of this.
All right, well, we will talk to you next from Chestnut Hill. Notre Dame-Boston College Saturday. Afternoon kick, 3:30 start. Priester and I will be out there, so we will talk to you Saturday. Pre-game analysis, post-game analysis, column, game coverage analysis, all that good stuff coming this weekend. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com.